I want to share a little bit with you guys tonight about my story and my walk with God. Roger's going to be teaching on walking with God over the next bit of time, I think. And I guess I just think it's important that we be real and be vulnerable with each other and understand that a walk with God isn't a perfect trajectory upward and onward all the time. You know, in a perfect world, it would be, but life doesn't work that way. We're sinful, fallen human beings, and instead of climbing upward and onward to God, sometimes we take a really scenic route that loops around, and sometimes it goes up and forward, and sometimes it backtracks a little bit, and sometimes we get really close to that trajectory, and sometimes we get really far away from it. And I want to share a little bit with you guys about a time when I was pretty far away from that trajectory of moving onward and upward to God. If we're walking with God, I feel like it implies a familiarity. Just like if you were going through life, walking through life with someone, you know that person. You are deeply acquainted with them. You have an understanding through shared experiences together if you're doing life together with someone and walking with them. And if we're walking with God, it should be that same way. We need to understand him and know him as well as we can from a human perspective. And we need to have those shared experiences. And there was a time in my life where I had a lot of that. I worked at a Christian camp through the summers in college. I went to a Christian university for my last 2 years of school. And there were, between those two, different levels of the Christian bubble. But there were a lot of opportunities kind of tailor-made for me to spend time with God. And I was able to read my Bible regularly and spend time praying regularly. And I knew that I was walking with God. And it was good. And I liked it. And it was such a satisfying feeling, but yet with yearning too. Because once you get a taste of who God is and what it is to walk with him, you're satisfied but hungry at the same time. And I knew what that was like. And after college, that bubble popped in a big way because I hit the real world, and I hit it hard. And I knew that I needed to keep spending time in the Word, but I was going through all sorts of seasons of life that were really distracting. I had to get a job, and I had to get up and go to work every day, all day long. And that was a little bit of a wake-up call. And then I met this guy, and he was really neat, and I was spending a lot of time with him. And then I married him. And then I had this responsibility to him as well. And then we had kids, and I had my hands full taking care of them because it's a big job. And all of a sudden, there was so much going on in my world that I wasn't making a priority of spending time with God. And I knew in my heart and in my spirit that I wasn't following that trajectory onward and upward to Christ anymore. And it bothered me. I wanted it back. But what's an interesting thing is that when you spend time not with God, there's this little thing called sin that creeps in, and it starts to pull you down, and it started to pull me down. I had some sinful attitudes and sinful behaviors that I knew were not good. But once you start getting into sin, it starts to feel kind of like this warm blanket, and it's comfortable, and it's familiar, and maybe you know you should get rid of that blanket, but it's comfortable, and it's familiar, and it can be hard to do that sometimes. And I started believing some lies. Some people would call them excuses. I think excuses is just a fancy word for lies. And I'm going to kind of share some of the lies that I believed that you guys may relate to at different points of your life. You might be familiar with these. I need my sleep. If I don't get enough sleep, I'm crabby. I can't be the wife I'm supposed to be. I can't do my job well. I can't take care of my kids if I don't have enough sleep. So it's important that I get enough sleep. And yeah, maybe I should get up and read my Bible, but if I'm doing that, then I'm crabby, and then I can't do the things that I'm supposed to do and do them well. So it's really important that I get enough sleep. Or I just don't have time. between trying to make sure that I do get enough sleep and then get up and get the kids going and make sure stuff is done around the house and keep track of the places that we're supposed to be and the times that we're supposed to be there and the things that other people want from me. Plus, I have to have my time. I mean, if I don't have some time to decompress and to just chill, I'm going to go crazy. And then we get back into that cycle again, which isn't good. So I know I should be reading my Bible, but when? I just don't have enough time. Or, okay, I was going to get up and read my Bible, but I needed to get that sleep, so it's not going to happen this morning, but I will get to it later. And some people might be really good at doing the later thing. I'm not. If I say I'm going to do it later, it's usually not going to get done. And I know that about myself, but I still would, you know, hit snooze on the alarm the times when my intentions were good and I was going to get up and read my Bible. And I would hit snooze, and I would say, well, I'll get to it later, you know, after I get the kitchen cleaned up, or after I get the kids in bed for nap, or at least when I get in bed, I can read my Bible before I go to sleep. Except I didn't. And I needed to really evaluate what was going on with those lies, because it wasn't just an excuse. It was a lie about my priorities. I was lying to myself about what was important to me. I need my sleep. Yeah, that's true. So why did I stay up until midnight, 1 o'clock, reading a book that was not the Bible? Or why did I stay up so late watching that show on Netflix? If I just make myself go to bed a little earlier, if I turn out the light a little earlier, I can get up a little earlier and still have the same amount of sleep. So it's not that I was prioritizing my sleep, it's that I was prioritizing me and my wants. It's the same thing with my time. I could put down my phone and not check Facebook 25 times a day. I could turn off Netflix. I could, you know, put my book down, or I could, instead of wandering aimlessly around the house, sit down and pick up my Bible. There are moments in there that if you combined all those moments, it creates a little window of time where you could read your Bible, where I could have been reading my Bible. But I didn't have time. No, the truth is, I didn't make the time. It wasn't the priority to me. The priority was me and what I felt like doing and what was important to me in that moment. Not looking long term, just in that moment. Instant gratification. Or I'll do it later. No, I wouldn't. And I knew that. And I needed to just admit that instead of make myself feel good by saying, it's important to me. I'll get to it. And then not actually ever getting to it. And as I was dealing with those lies that were going on in my head that I kept telling myself, I was also feeding myself a bunch of feel-goods. Like, I go to church every Sunday. I hear stuff from the Bible every Sunday. I get to spend time in worship and connect with God. That's good, right? Or every night when I get in bed, I pray. So I'm talking to God. So that's good. And I'm doing it right. Or there's some Christian books out there that I've been picking up because they're talking about interesting Christian material, and I'm doing that, so I'm being stimulated spiritually, so that's okay. And I'm involved in a small group, and we have great conversations, and that's really edifying, so I'm okay. And yeah, maybe I'm not reading my Bible, but it's okay, right? And the truth is, it wasn't, and I knew it, because I knew that I didn't have that closeness with God that I had experienced at other points in my life. And it was bothering me. And the sin that I knew was there was bothering me. But I just wasn't quite ready, wasn't quite strong enough, disciplined enough to push all that aside and say, no, God, I am making you a priority. And I would say, I want to go deeper, Lord. I want to go deeper. But I wouldn't do anything about it. And what good does it do to say something if you're not going to follow it up? I could talk the talk really well, but I was not walking the walk. And bless the Lord, he meets us where we're at, and he knows what we need, because all of a sudden, it was time for Hayden to start kindergarten. And I had this wonderful thing called sleep, because my kids were trained to stay in their beds, not in their beds, but in their bedrooms until 8 o'clock. And I got to stay in bed until 8 o'clock, not always asleep, because they were noisy and they didn't always follow the rule, but I could stay in bed, wake up easily, and then get up at 8 o'clock when it was time for them to get up. And that's not going to fly when you got to get a kid to kindergarten. So I thought, all right, here we go, Lord. If I have to set an alarm and get myself out of bed so that I can make sure that Hayden is up and out the door to school, what's half an hour? I could set that alarm half an hour earlier, and I could do this get up and read your Bible thing like I'm supposed to be doing. And so I thought, all right, something's got to give, because I'm going crazy knowing that I'm not where I need to be with God and that it's a lot up to me to change that. So I set my alarm half an hour earlier, and I got up, and I read my Bible, and it was good. Mm-hmm. And after a while, you know what I found? Those sinful attitudes weren't a warm blanket anymore. Mm-hmm. They were repulsive. And it wasn't that I just couldn't find the strength to set them aside. It was that I wanted desperately to kick them aside. And I did. And I focused on it. And God brought me out of those seasons of sin and into seasons of grace and mercy and love and compassion. I started to find that I was setting a good example for my kids. Sometimes they would wake up before it was time for them to get up. I wasn't quite done. And they would come out and curl up with me while I finished my Bible time. And they get to see their mom prioritizing spending time in the Word and prioritizing praying and saying, no, kids, you're important, but right now I'm talking to God, so you need to let me talk to God. I found that the fruits of the Spirit were more available to me. I was able to grab onto those. And instead of reacting with irritability and anger and frustration, sometimes I was able to grab onto kindness and to gentleness and patience and self-control and all of these things that get cultivated when we go deeper with God and when we get more in touch with Him. I found out that I was learning who He was. If you're going to be close to someone, you need to know them, and you need to know them deeply. And I was learning who God was and also who He created me to be and what His purposes were for my life and how He could use me right where I was at, with little kids around me and everything, that God could take that and use it. And more than anything, I found out that instead of seeking me, remember we talked about priorities with all those lies that I was believing before? I was seeking God, and I was seeking what He wanted me to do in this situation or that situation. And I was seeking what His response would be for me instead of just my own response. And it's not to say that I've got this figured out now, but I'm really excited because I've spent 2 years now routinely reading my Bible and talking to God. And it's kind of shameful almost to say that I've spent 2 years doing that. I'm 33 years old. There should be a lot more years in there. But those 2 years have been huge, especially compared to the years that came before, where I wanted more. I wanted to be close to God, but I wasn't doing anything about it. And so right now, as we're going to go ahead and get into a little bit more worship, I really encourage you guys to think about what maybe God is calling you to do with your own energy to get closer to Him. We can be here, we can sing songs, we can really want this or that from our relationship with God, but sometimes God asks us to get up and do something about it. So let's go ahead and spend a little more time worshiping and asking God, God, what do you want for me to do in this part of the relationship?
The scripture from Micah chapter 6 and verse 8 says, "Know, O people, the Lord has told you what is good, and this is what He requires of you, to do what is right, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with your God." Tonight what I want to share with you is focusing on that part of walking humbly with God, and so I've entitled this message, Walking with God. As we do that, I would like to use some biblical examples of those who walked with God and what their experience was like. First, we'll talk about Enoch, and I've put many of the scriptures on the screen this evening, so you won't have to look a lot of them up. Some you will, but first of all, Enoch in Genesis chapter 5 and verses 21 through 24, it says, "Enoch lived in a close fellowship with God for another 300 years, and he had other sons and daughters. Enoch lived 365 years walking in close fellowship with God. Then one day he disappeared because God took him." Interesting. Boom. It doesn't say that he died and no one could find him. It says that he disappeared. God took him. It was one of those raptures where God just took him. And then we also see the experience of another who walked with God, and that is Noah. And it says in Genesis chapter 6 and verses 8 and 9, it says, "But Noah found favor with the Lord. This is the account of Noah and his family. Noah was a righteous man, the only blameless person living on earth at the time. And he walked in close fellowship with God." So right from the very beginning, the book of beginnings, Genesis, we see those that walked with God. And obviously this evening I'm not being exhaustive in my illustrations of those that did. I mean, we could even go back with Adam and Eve, and we see that God walked with them in the cool of the day in the garden. And so there are these biblical examples of those that walked, and not just walked with God, but walked in a close relationship. As we've been talking about tonight, the love of God that is expressed and how we are embraced by that love and that acceptance of God so much that it is a pleasurable thing to walk with the Lord. But here's some characteristics of those that did walk with God specifically. Those we'll look at the examples that I've shared. But I want to share this passage with you from Amos chapter 3 and verse 3. It says, "Can two people walk together without agreeing on the direction?" And, you know, I just want you to think about that a little bit. You know, obviously, this is a rhetorical question. It's like, no, absolutely. No one can walk together unless they agree on the direction. If they're not in agreement on the direction, they're going to be walking two different ways. There's sometimes when Melanie and I go out and do a walk in the evening, and we have a kind of a pathway that we go around, and we go so many times, and depending on our level of energy, it's not always the same number of times that we go around this path. And once in a while, one will begin to go around the path again, and the other heads home. And it's like, okay, all of a sudden, we're not in agreement because we're going two different directions. And so then we talk a little bit and say, okay, is it time to go home or can we do one more? And we come to agreement so that we can continue walking together. There have been times where she has told me, you can go on ahead and I'm going to do what I want to do. But we usually come to agreement so we can stay walking together. So no, it's impossible to walk together unless you agree on the direction. And here's the deal. With God, the intent is not that he would walk with us in our direction, but it's us walking with him. We walk with God, not God walking with us. And so one of the things that we'll find out as far as characteristics of those that walk with God is the characteristic of obedience. Because God isn't going to change his ways to accommodate us. He says, here's the way, walk you in it. And then we get to choose whether we're going to be in agreement and walk with God, or do it ourselves and walk our own way and just do it the way we want. So the first characteristic of walking with God is obedience. And we see that in these examples, these biblical examples that we've looked at, specifically Noah in Genesis chapter 6 and verse 22. It says, "So Noah did everything exactly as God had commanded him." And that was when the Lord had said, take all the animals, two animals of each kind, put them in the ark. Take enough food for your family and for the animals, put that in the ark. And then it says, so Noah did everything exactly as God commanded him. And then again, it says in chapter 7 and verse 5, so Noah did everything as the Lord commanded him. And so that obedience to God is the way that we will walk with him. And so as we share about, you know, reading the scriptures, how vital that is for a close walk with God, this is how we find out where God is going, or the direction that God would have us go, so that we can be in agreement, so that we can walk with him. If we're defying his word, if we're not obedient to his word, then we won't have a walk with God. We'll just be going our own direction. In Hebrews chapter 11 and verses 5 through 7, it speaks of this obedience and the result of this walk in this relationship with God. An act of faith is what enabled these to do what they did. In Hebrews 11:5, it says, "It was by faith that Enoch was taken up to heaven without dying. He disappeared because God took him. For before he was taken up, he was known as a person who pleased God." Now, I don't think Enoch was what you would call standing in faith for this, you know, because up to that point, no one had been taken up that we know of or that is recorded were taken up without dying. So it's not like, oh, I believe, I have faith in God that I won't die. I have faith in God that he'll take me up and I won't see death. I have faith in God. So it's not like he's standing in faith. But what he is he's walking with the Lord and he's trusting the Lord. And as a result of his trust in the Lord, there's an expression of faith that pleased God, because it says in the very next verse, in Hebrews 11:6, it says, and it is impossible to please God without faith. Anyone who wants to come to him must believe that God exists and that he rewards those who sincerely seek him. So we see in Enoch's walk with God, he was sincerely seeking God, and he was expressing faith so much that it pleased God, and this was his testimony before he was taken up, that he pleased God, and then God took him up. Continuing on with verse 7, it says, and it was by faith that Noah built a large boat to save his family from the flood. He obeyed God, who warned him about things that had never happened before. By his faith, Noah condemned the rest of the world, and he received the righteousness that comes by faith. When this talks about God warned Noah about things that had never happened before, it's like Noah had no perception of experience. Well, okay, yeah, we've seen volcanoes erupt before, or we've seen rivers flood before, but all of a sudden, God is saying the whole earth is going to be flooded. The only way you will survive is if you build this ark. And Noah has to trust these words of God so that he's obedient to do what God says. Noah walked with God. It resulted in a trust. It was relational, Noah with God. And so as a result of that trust relationship, Noah knew better to accept the things that God was saying, that he was warning, and to be obedient to that so he could save himself and his family and each variety of animal. So he trusted God. By faith, Noah built a large boat to save his family. And it says, by his faith, Noah also, he had a message to the world, and that was he condemned the rest of the world and received the righteousness that comes by faith. We'll see in a little bit farther in this message how sometimes that walk with God is not an easy walk, and we find out that Noah had that challenge as well. So another characteristic of walking with God is the characteristic of faith, or I like to call it trust. Sometimes I think faith gets mixed up as kind of a commodity that if we can get enough of it, we can trade God for what it is that we're believing for. It's like, okay, now I have enough faith. Now I can get this what I need from God. That's not what faith is at all. Really, faith is an expression of trust. I trust you, Lord, so I'm going to do as you say, and I believe what you say too, even when it comes to providing for us. Like Noah believed that God would save them through the flood, he and his family and the animals. So this trust really needs to lead us to a place of relationship with the Lord where we are like this, as it says in Psalms 119 and verse 73. It says, you made me, you created me, now give me the sense to follow your commands. Isn't that just forthright there? It's like, Lord, why would I be so stupid as to do something else? You're the one who created me. You're the one who created life. You're the one who put all this together. You obviously know how it works. Give me the sense to follow what you say. Give me the sense to follow your commands. So walking with God is really agreeing about his direction for our lives. So it's obedience, it's trust, it's following his way, and then we will be able to walk with God. However, one of the things that we need to come to a realistic understanding with is that the pathway walking with God will not always be a pathway without resistance. Oftentimes there's great resistance in walking with God. And I want you to just think about typically when you are going to do something, when you're going to go someplace, you take the path of least resistance. You take the path of the shortest distance. If you're traveling on a journey, unless you have another purpose in mind. And sometimes when you are on a journey, like say you're going on vacation and you're going out to California or someplace like that. Well, on the way, you're going to maybe veer off of the shortest distance there because you want to see various attractions on the way. So you have a greater purpose than just getting to the destination. And we'll find that's the way it is with the Lord, with us as well. And like I said, oftentimes we take the path of least resistance, but if you have a purpose for resistance, you know, as in strength training, it's like, you know, we don't go around the track or around on our walk just for because we like walking in circles. There's a purpose. There's strength training, or there's resistance in physical activity that lends towards the purpose of staying in shape or getting in shape or those kinds of things. And we'll see with God, there are many times the pathway that he has for us to walk in, there's going to be areas of resistance that we have to deal with, and that's because God is strength training us for things that he has prepared for us, and those things are in advance. The training comes in advance. We see that the pathway that Enoch and Noah had to walk was not always without resistance. They had challenges in their walk and their purposes that God had created for them, and it included a path of resistance. But will you still walk with God? That's the question. When Enoch in Jude, verse 14 and 15, it says, Enoch, who lived in the seventh generation after Adam, prophesied about these people. He said, listen, the Lord is coming with countless thousands of his holy ones to execute judgment on the people of the world. He will convict every person of all the ungodly things they have done and for all the insults the ungodly sinners have spoken against him. And so in this we see Enoch as a prophet of God isn't just given a very positive word that everyone's going to enjoy. Oh, Enoch, let's invite him as our guest speaker because he's always so encouraging. You know, instead it's Enoch, you know what? We don't like listening. You're always speaking those negative things. Jeremiah, the prophet Jeremiah, had the same thing going on. Every time he opened his mouth, he was speaking the words of judgment on the people who were rebellious against God. And finally, Jeremiah says, I don't want to do this anymore. But if I stop speaking, he says, it's like a fire that shut up in my bones. I can't hold it back. It's the word of the Lord. I have to bring it forth. And so these things create pathways of resistance where sometimes it's people that are resisting you, or sometimes it's circumstances that you go through that are just struggling, that you're working through and having to live by faith, not by sight. And these things are stretching, and it's resistance kind of training that is causing you to be stronger and stronger as you walk more and more with the Lord. So it's not always an easy path. Same with Noah. In 2 Peter 2, verse 5, it says, and God did not spare the ancient world except for Noah and the seven others of his family. Noah warned the world of God's righteous judgment, so God protected Noah when he destroyed the world of ungodly people with a vast flood. So here, while Noah is building this ark, he's also called a preacher of righteousness, or he's declaring to the world, this is what's going to happen to you if you do not repent. There's a flood coming. The waters are going to cover the whole of the earth. Yeah, right, Noah. We've never seen that before. We've never even seen rain before, Noah. What are you talking about? No, God's going to pour out water on the heavens, and the waters from the below will rise up, and this whole earth is going to be flooded. Yeah, right, Noah. And so he had to speak this word to the people, and it was obviously one that ended up with resistance towards him. We have another example of Joseph, and he received a dream from the Lord, and he wanted to share it with his brothers right away. Genesis 37, 6 and 7 says, listen to this dream, he said. We were out in the field tying up bundles of grain. Suddenly my bundle stood up, and your bundles all gathered around and bowed low before mine. So obviously, you know, Joseph was excited about this dream. He thought, okay, brothers, now I'm your leader. God has shown me I'm your leader. So you guys, you might as well just bow down to me now, right? You know, he's already the favored child of his father Israel. And now he is, you know, spouting this off to his brothers. But he's thinking, you know, I'm on the pathway to leadership. So you guys just get along, you know, follow in line. Follow me, I'm your leader. Obviously, this dream that God has given me reveals that truth. However, what was the experience? What was Joseph's pathway to get to that point where eventually his brothers did bow down? First of all, he was thrown in the pit. Next, he was sold into slavery. Next, he was falsely accused and imprisoned. And finally, he stood before the king to interpret the king's vision or dream. And then the king put him in that place where eventually his brothers came to him. And as a result of the famine that was happening in Egypt and the wisdom that God had given Joseph, his brothers did come and bow down to him in request of food for their being able to be sustained. So the question is, when we're walking with God, is it his way and obedience to his ways, or are we just going to walk by ourselves? Because unless we agree with him, we won't be walking with him. We'll just be walking on our own. Moses had this experience and knew the difference between walking with God and walking without him. And if you want to turn in your Bibles to Exodus chapter 33, this is the one I am going to make you look up. Exodus chapter 33 and verses 1 through 5 and then 12 through 17. I'll read 1 through 5 first. It says, "The Lord said to Moses, 'Get going, and the people you brought up from the land of Egypt. Go up to the land I swore to give to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. I told them, I will give this land to your descendants, and I will send an angel before you to drive out the Canaanites, Ammonites, Hittites, Perizzites, Hivites, and Jebusites. Go up to this land that flows with milk and honey, but I will not travel among you, for you are a stubborn and rebellious people. If I did, I would surely destroy you along the way.' When the people heard these stern words, they went into mourning and stopped wearing their jewelry and fine clothes. For the Lord had told Moses to tell them, 'You are a stubborn and rebellious people. If I were to travel with you even a moment, I would destroy you. Remove your jewelry and fine clothes while I decide what to do with you.'" So, you know, we see this. God is telling Moses, go take your people, go to the promised land, but I'm not going to travel with you. I would destroy you stubborn, rebellious people. Here we see a people that want to do it their own way. God has given him his commands, and yet they refuse to obey, and they're continually grumbling about the pathway that God has chosen for them. So he says, fine, there's the direction. You go, but I'm not going with you. If I did, I would destroy you. So we see what it's like when people are doing things their own way. God says, fine, go ahead, but I'm not walking with you. I'm not going to walk with you. And there is the challenge of walking with God and trying to do it our own way, or being rebellious with God when we are attempting to walk with him and his presence does not go with us. However, look at verse 12 through 17. "One day Moses said to the Lord, 'You have been telling me, take these people up to the promised land, but you haven't told me whom you will send with me. You have told me I know you by name, and I look favorably on you. If it is true that you look favorably on me, let me know your ways so I may understand you more fully and continue to enjoy your favor. And remember that this nation is your very own people.' The Lord replied, 'I will personally go with you, Moses, and I will give you rest. Everything will be fine for you.' Then Moses said, 'If you don't personally go with us, don't make us leave this place. How will anyone know that you look favorably on me and on your people, if you don't go with us? For your presence among us sets your people and me apart from all other people on the earth.' The Lord replied to Moses, 'I will indeed do what you have asked, for I look favorably on you, and I know you by name.'" So here again, we see this aspect of relationship. Moses is pursuing after God to know his ways, to know the character and the nature of God. And he knows enough to say, you know, if you don't go with us, don't make us leave this place. And then as a result of his continuing to plead with the Lord said, yes, I will go with you. And Moses made this distinction. He realized this distinction that God's presence is what set those people apart from all others. Now, I want you to think again about the pathway that God chooses. And we talk about taking the pathway of least resistance. It's the default thing for us to do. But sometimes when we are attempting to make our own pathway, it ends up being a much, much more difficult thing. It's not easy to walk in rebellion to God. Think about the difference that the people of Israel would have had. They were delivered from Egypt. God split the Red Sea. They go out to Mount Sinai. They receive the law. It was an 11-day journey to Canaan. How long did it take them to get there? 40 years. Shortest distance, least resistance. Had they obeyed God, they would have been enjoying that land flowing with milk and honey without that whole generation having to, you know, die in the wilderness, without all that wandering in the wilderness. What a difference it would have made had they chosen to follow, to walk with God and be in agreement with his ways rather than choosing it to do it their own ways. So we see this pattern. We see walking with God tends towards faith or trust in God as you become more and more knowledgeable of the character and the nature of God. There's a greater level of trust, and as a result of that greater level of trust comes obedience. As we obey, we walk with God. If we're disobeying, we aren't walking with God because he's not going to go with us. And that obedience will lend towards us accomplishing or arriving the destination, accomplishing the purposes that God has for us, that he has intended for us. So we want to choose to walk with God. So Enoch, we saw his experience was he was taken without death. Noah, his experience was an ark of salvation for he and his family and the animals of the earth. And for Joseph, it resulted in saving Israel, Israel's family during the famine, and then therefore the nation of Israel. For Moses, it meant deliverance from Egypt and eventually leading them to the promised land. That was just before the promised land that Moses was taken out of the picture, and Joshua was the one that led them into the promised land. But Moses was the one that delivered them from Egypt and led them through the wilderness. And so what about you? You get to write your story of your walking with the Lord in obedience to his word, in faith and trust in God and his ways, and then just agreement with him so that you're walking with him.